So like the promise of virtue is that we'd be so habituated or that we'd be so kind of shaped by whatever pertinent virtue that it's easy, it's prompt, it's joyful for us to incline to the good. We don't even hesitate. We don't even think twice because it's just a matter of course.
Does doctrine really matter? The Apostle Paul once wrote to a young pastor named Titus, instructing him to hold firm to the trustworthy word he was taught, so that he may be able to give instruction in sound doctrine. Welcome to Credo Podcast, where doctrine matters and theological ideas have consequences. Here's your host, Dr. Matthew Barrett, executive editor of Credo Magazine.
Hi, friends. I'm Matthew Barrett. I am the founder of Credo and also host of the Credo Podcast. I'm a research professor at Trinity Anglican Seminary. And those of you who have listened and watched before know just of my love for Thomas Aquinas. And I thought, wouldn't it be just great, really selfish for me, but wouldn't it be so great to sit down and have conversations with some of my favorite Thomas that I've learned so much from and benefited from, but I thought, wouldn't it be great for them to benefit as well? And so I really have a privilege here because I'm sitting here with Father Gregory Pyne, and there's a lot I could say, but the first thing is we're here in D.C.
Yep.
And you do a lot of work for the Thomistic Institute. You are also a Dominican friar, the province of St. Joseph, but you've written this book that I really enjoyed called Prudence, and the subtitle is actually the best part.
Nice.
Choose Confidently, Live Boldly with OSB.
Yeah.
Thanks for writing this.
My joy.
And it won't surprise some of our viewers that Thomas Aquinas makes a couple of appearances.
He does.
And, is kind of a friend throughout.
He is.
Yeah.
He's a steady guide. He's like Virgil is to Dante, except instead of handing Dante off to Beatrice, he just keeps going. And then instead of having Beatrice hand Dante off to the Blessed Virgin Mary, he just keeps going. So, yeah. Otherwise, yeah. Perfect parallel.
Well, maybe we should just start off with the obvious question.
Yeah.
But it's not that obvious for many. Because maybe they haven't thought through this before, or maybe they have, but they're not entirely clear on what virtue actually is.
Yeah.
So what is virtue, especially according to Thomas Aquinas?
Sure. Maybe we can go like as general as possible to like as specific as possible. If you look at the word, it just means a power or a strength of a certain sort. So a virtue is something that empowers us or strengthens us, and then we're going to get more fine-grained. A definition that you hear from Aristotle is it makes a man good and to act well. So a virtue has something to do with our activity.
Yeah.
So it's not just like cool hat that you wear, or it's not just like, sweet clothes with which you adorn yourself. It's something that gets into your very power of performing activity.
Hmm.
And so then we can get even more specific and say it's the type of thing which Aristotle calls a quality. So it's something that actually conditions our very being, our very character, and it stably or permanently disposes us to act in a particular way. So whereas you might have a disposition that you might follow for the most part, but not always, a virtue is the type of thing that really solidifies your activity such that you can almost trust yourself to perform this or that type of activity reliably. And it becomes the type of thing which for you is easy, you know, that it kind of rolls off your tongue or it kind of flows from your person.
You're not always having to sit there and deliberate forever before you do something virtuous.
Yeah, so some people say that virtue, it makes that type of activity second nature.
Yeah. Hi, friends. Matthew Barrett here. I'm interrupting our conversation to tell you about something quite personal to me right here in Kansas City. Did you know that I lead a school of theology called Anselm House? Anselm Fellows come together in my own home for evening prayer around a common rule of life, the Book of Common Prayer.
And then we also have a meal together around a common table that cultivates virtue and the good life. And finally, we sit down for Socratic dialogue because Anselm Fellows are reading through the great tradition. Of course, we're doing all this to contemplate the beauty of our Lord. It's named after Anselm, the Archbishop of Canterbury, who so modeled faith-seeking understanding. Did you also know that many of our Anselm Fellows also receive so much of their degree through Trinity Anglican Seminary? In fact, you can receive up to 50% off and 50% of your entire degree through Trinity Anglican Seminary. It really is unprecedented. But best of all, did you also know that Anselm Fellows, they're not just coming and meeting in my home, they're also participating in the liturgy of the church here at St. Aidan's Anglican Church. In other words, their education is fully integrated with the sacramental theology and life of the church. It really is wonderful. I can tell you this from experience. It's one of a kind. Why don't you come to Kansas City? Join us, become an Anselm Fellow. Go to theanselmhouse.com, theanselmhouse.com. There you will find an application. Send it in. We'd love to consider it. And we'd love to see you here in Kansas City as an Anselm Fellow.
Now, I really liked how you began, because rather than just jumping right into all the fine details of how to distinguish the virtues, you begin with happiness. And that's really so important, because for each of us, that is the ultimate question we want to end with. But you begin with it. Why? What does happiness have to do with virtue?
Yeah. I think that for anything in human life, it's helpful if we can get clear on what motivates us. So that way we can be more kind of discerning in how we go about the pursuit. And so I broach the question of happiness in that spirit, because in everything that we do, we're really in search of happiness. Because if you were to ask somebody a line of questions like, you know, like, why are you studying at Catholic University of America? Oh, I want to get a degree. Well, why do you want to get a degree? Well, I want to be employable. Well, why do you want to be employable? So I can make sufficient amount of money, so I can support my family, so I can love them well, so that we can all go to heaven. And in heaven, I hope to be happy with God and with the church unto ages of ages. But, you know, provided the person answers honestly, sincerely, we can track most of those different kind of lines of questions down to happiness. We act in the way that we do because we hope to find happiness in the various goods which we pursue or that we lay hold of. And so I think that if virtue registers for us as a kind of dread obligation or a duty, you know, you might be able to motivate some type of response. But I think it's helpful, and especially like parents know this when their kids get to a certain age, it's helpful to explain to them the logic, right? So like, we don't just encourage good behavior because I can't stand the sound of your voice between the hours of, you know, 5 a.m. and 6 a.m.
Yeah.
You know, we communicate to you these rules, these regulations, because they kind of put a little fence around or put a little wall around that space where you can expect to enjoy good relationships, you know, like where you can expect to know God and love God and to know and to love your brothers and sisters. And when we break these rules, we step outside of that space and we find ourselves at odds ends.
Yeah.
We find ourselves in the midst of a broken situation at a great distance from those whom we ought to love best. So I think like when you can communicate that virtue is the type of thing that facilitates happiness, it helps in part to motivate a response which is more generous, right? Which is less obligation laden. Obligations are fine, but I typically don't lead obligation.
Yeah. Now, some may be familiar with, say, the theological virtues.
Yeah.
Faith, hope, and love, which the Apostle Paul has a lot to say about. But they may be less familiar with some of the moral virtues, as we call them. And then, even if they begin to study them or try to really embody them in their life, they're maybe confused. Are these virtues that I should be looking to God to give to me, to infuse within me, or should I be actually trying to acquire these myself? So help us out here. What are some of the moral virtues?
Mm-hmm.
And how do we answer that very common dilemma.
Sure. I'd say there are three main buckets into which we can sort virtue, theological virtues that you mentioned. We call them theological principally because they get us to God, right? They have God for their object or their aim.
Yeah.
And then we'll also talk about intellectual virtues, which we don't really describe as often or with as much frequency. The main ones would be like wisdom, knowledge, understanding, and then prudence is also in that bucket, as is art, which is just like kind of technical competence, really.
Yeah.
And then the moral virtues are the ones where we're talking about those types of virtues which help us to regulate our guts and our heart, right? Really to regulate our appetites. So the intellectual virtues are virtues of thought, and then the moral virtues are virtues of like affection and emotion.
Mm.
So the big ones would be like justice, fortitude, and temperance. And it's really the pagan tradition focuses a lot on moral virtues. Obviously, they don't have access to the theological virtues. But like Aristotle, for instance, will say, you know, that like the intellectual virtues are virtues,
yeah,
but they don't make you good and to act well in the same way that the moral virtues do.
Right.
Like it capacitates you for good action, but it doesn't necessarily direct or guide that good action with a kind of infallible surety.
Yeah.
So like knowledge, for instance, I can accumulate lots of knowledge about the banking system, and I can do that to be a responsible member or like a responsible employee of the Federal Reserve. I can also deploy that knowledge in service of my own nefarious purposes. Like I could use it in the service of thievery. So to have that knowledge doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to use it well. I might use it ill.
Yeah.
But when you have like the virtue of fortitude, you can only use it well.
Mm.
So too with temperance and justice. Exactly. You can only use it well. To act against it is to, in a certain sense, leave it behind.
Right.
So like, yeah, you'll have Plato and Aristotle and Cicero who focus a lot on those moral virtues, within that ensemble of the cardinal virtues. They'll add prudence into the mix. And, yeah, as to the latter half of your question, how do we get the virtues? Well, both. We both acquire them and have them infused. And there are certain ones that you can only have infused. So like faith, hope, and charity. The only way in which to get them is to have God give them. And so we come before the Most High God in the disposition of, you know, asking, seeking, knocking. But then there are other virtues, and we can think here especially of the moral virtues, that can both be infused and acquired. And that sounds like double duty and perhaps unnecessary double duty. And certainly there are voices in the tradition who say there's only acquired or there's only infused when it comes to these ones. But St. Thomas will say that there are both.
Yeah.
And the best person writing on this right now is Adam Eitel, who has just a lot of really excellent insights into not just the exegetical part, but also just like the more mystagogical part. Like, what does this mean for us as Christians? And I think the basic idea is that we have need for both acquired temperance and infused temperance because we need to moderate our appetites, not just according to a lower wisdom, like the wisdom of the dieter, but according to a higher wisdom, like the wisdom of the one who fasts. So I think like when it comes to acquisition, we just repeat the action. That's the ordinary way in which to acquire a virtue, is through repetition, habituation. And then when it comes to infusion, we beg God for a greater share in his infinite gift. But then we also do what we can with what we have in order to like address the obstacles or the hindrances to the reign of that virtue in our life. So we're lying to ourselves if we say, I'm asking God for temperance. And I just restocked my alcohol cabinet. You know, it's like, well, which one, you know? Yeah. So there's a sense in which we have to consent or cooperate with it. And that will draw on our own human stores.
Now, these virtues, I mean, we're parsing them, but really they are connected to one another.
Yeah.
And there can be a danger, right? And parsing them to such a degree that we're not actually thinking of them in relation to each other.
Yeah.
Why is that the case? Why is it so important to also think of them as a whole?
I think the basic idea is that, all right, so we're human beings. We have this human nature.
Yeah.
We're on our way towards our human end. And in order to attain to that end, as Christians, we know that we need some healing. But all human beings, they have some kind of understanding that we need some growing, right?
Mm.
And so how are we going to heal? How are we going to grow? Well, God bestows upon us a share in his divine life. And we talk about it kind of as like a habit of being. We refer to it as grace. But then these habits of doing, you know, we can refer to the virtues and the gifts of the Holy Spirit. And one way to understand that is like God wants to get his life into all of the different nooks and crannies of our existence so as to affect a healing and a growing that is awesome, like really beautiful, in fact. But that requires us to have some understanding of the more fine-grained or textured moral realities by which we're confronted. Because if somebody were to say like, hey, listen, I don't really care too terribly much about the different virtues. All I know is that you just got to like, you know, love the Lord and be about your business. It's like, okay, no, that's a fine response. But then you find yourself embroiled in a more complex situation.
Right.
And it's like this member of your family is asking you for money.
Yeah.
You're like, oh no, this is hard.
Yeah.
Because like charity would seem to suggest, but also I've been taken advantage of in the past. And I know that I've got rights and being Christian doesn't make me a victim. And yet I don't want to insist upon them too stridently because then I end up sounding shrill and silly, like a perpetual victim. It's just like, so it can be helpful to have some sense as to the complexity of the confrontation, but also the complexity of our own nature.
Yeah.
Because there are like different ways in which we want to draw on our own stores. And so in effect, the virtues, they're connected. And St. Thomas will say they grow together like the fingers on a hand.
Okay.
So you can expect that as you cultivate one virtue, you'll cultivate the other virtues in due course.
Which is good news.
Which is good news. Yeah. One way in which like Aristotle will say often, as the man is, so he sees. So provided that you're seeking to grow in temperance and fortitude and justice, you're going to have an easier time being prudent.
Yeah.
Because, you know, let's say that you're somebody who is enslaved to Sour Patch Kids, and you find the prospect of having to make your own lunch really, really difficult. And you just can't really find it in your own heart of hearts to give other people what they're due. Well, when it comes time for you to like make yourself a lunch and not gorge yourself on Sour Patch Kids or to share half of your food with the person who could otherwise go without, you're going to have great difficulty even envisioning that situation as a prudent person ought, because you're just thinking of the satisfaction of your own desires, your unwillingness to confront difficulty, and a kind of callousness towards the other and his own person. So it's like, as you cultivate these moral virtues, it becomes easier to be prudent. And as you grow in prudence, it becomes easier to cultivate the moral virtues.
At what point do we start to slide into vice, though?
Yeah, so sometimes. Aristotle has this kind of continuum. When describing the acquired virtues, he says you've got the vicious person, the incontinent person, the continent person, and then the virtuous person. So like a lot of us live in the land of continents. The continent person, which I think is easy for us to conceive, understands what's good for him and struggles to carry it out, but typically overcomes his own kind of like base inclinations and perseveres in the pursuit of that goodness. So like the promise of virtue is that we'd be so habituated or that we'd be so kind of shaped by whatever pertinent virtue that it's easy, it's prompt, it's joyful for us to incline to the good. We don't even hesitate. We don't even think twice because it's just a matter of course. Other people, you know, like they might struggle more with incontinence. You can think about a person who's kind of like breaking patterns of addiction, who knows what's good, struggles for it, but often fails, often capitulates. The vicious person, a lot of us have a harder time conceiving of what that would look like, but basically it's the person who takes evil for his good.
Yeah.
Right? So his commission of evil is something that's easy and prompt and joyful. And he doesn't even really struggle anymore.
Yeah.
All right? He's given into it. And so you can think about like Milton's characterization of Satan in that regard. You know, like, let evil be my good. So, yeah, there's always a risk of vice, and it can come under various guises, you know, whether it's self-justification or rationalization, or this is just what self-care looks like in this situation. I need to tend to my needs, or I need to tend to my wants, when in fact it might just be giving up, you know, like a kind of thoroughgoing giving up. So, yeah, obviously good to be on the lookout, and we have the church's law so as to kind of hem our efforts in. When we say, like, you know what God really wants from me right now? He wants me to break the seventh commandment. Wait a second. That doesn't make sense. It's called a commandment for a reason.
Well, this is so, so fun because we've really just touched the surface, right? I mean, we're going to come back in the next video. We're going to discuss prudence in particular. And I'm going to ask you some hard questions.
Nice.
So we really get into the weeds and look really with a magnifying glass at what prudence is all about.
Now you can fill up on theology each day by visiting credomag.com. There you will find the latest issues of Credo Magazine with articles on key doctrines of the faith and regular video interviews with Dr. Matthew Barrett, where he answers some of the toughest theological questions of our day. Be sure to subscribe to Credo Podcast to join the conversation, a conversation where doctrine matters.